From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 25th day of August, 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. The state statisticians from Illinois, Iowa, and Minnesota will be here with updates from their regions. It's getting drier still in Iowa, and we'll hear about that. And as we close out our time together, we'll talk about NPK applications and how that should be done and what it might look like across the state of Illinois, both as it relates to crop budgets and application rates. Emerson Napsiger and Gary Schnittke will be here, and we'll discuss the weather forecast to that with Don Day at Day Weather, all on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn for the day up 9 cents at $3.40¾. New crop December at $3.54½, 9½ higher. The March up 9¼ at $3.66¼. July at $3.77, 8 cents higher. November beans up 14½ cents at $9.20¼. January 9.27¼, 14¼ higher. And next year's July at 9.37¼, up 11¾. The bean oil futures 32 cents higher. Bean meal up $2.50. July soft red winter wheat 6¼ higher at 5.48. And the hard red at 4.81¼, up 9 cents on the afternoon. Live cattle futures 85 cents higher in the October at $108.77½. And the feeders up 22½ cents at $143.75 for the September lean hogs in the October contract. $55.95, $1.35 higher. Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, now joins us to tell us about this marketplace. I suppose it was mostly because of the deteriorating crop progress numbers that came out from USDA yesterday afternoon that drove the marketplace. Kind of started last night, but it continued throughout the day today. What can you tell me about it?
Yeah, I think that, you know, down 5% at 64%, the lowest rating of the year. Iowa down 9%. That with all of the other major states, you know, taking a little bit of hit. That the weather forecast continues to stay dry. We're starting to see a little maturity in the beans. We're starting to see a few of them turn. How much help can happen after we start turning? And it's sort of a, can the rain get here to help us before we get this crop ripened and ready for harvest? And I think that a lot of that was looked at, and you take those numbers down, and we were oversold, and we had the funds being great big buyers today.
Yeah, so there is some corn, I think maybe as little as 5% left to sell out by the 31st day of this month, from what I gather. Should producers take advantage of today, or do they do an in-charge?
We've got a few days before, we got this week, and I'd probably wait after the way we closed today. A couple of the advisory firms today got out of their D's 20 and D's 21 corn on the close, on a stop close only order. So we've got things moving up a little bit here. I guess I'd probably give it another day or two if I still had some corn stored that way. So, but I mean, the weather forecast, we are saying that the Hurricane Laura, it's going to be called a hurricane now, and it's a threat to the Gulf and the Delta area. A little bit that way, we're seeing crude up more on the idea that it could hurt some of the infrastructure down there. And the negative thing that they talked about today, Todd, was that CONAB talking about big increases in South America for next year. So that sort of hangs over our head, too. But we broke through some old highs, and it looks like we might be able to work a little higher the rest of the week.
Yeah, so maybe a early low. That would be pretty typical for a crop year, and then the recent crop years anyway, and then driving higher into the harvest season. Although fundamentally, there's just an awful lot of grain, or should have been an awful lot of grain around. I guess we'll have to wait for the USDA report to give us an idea what really has happened in Iowa and the rest of the United States. That'll come September 11th.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to maybe point out is, you know, unbelievably enough, that a lot of your terminals have been pushing the basis levels pretty hard for the next week to 10 days as far as they're all over for their bids on their corn and beans here. And that's just a little bit unusual for the last of August, where we're generally, they're taking advantage and they're quite a bit under for this time period. So we're wondering, you know, where's the shortage of grain coming from? And did all the storage that was destroyed in Iowa, is that sort of putting a little bit of pressure to bid up for some corn that's in Indiana and Illinois.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows 88% of the corn crop around the nation has entered the dough stage. The rolling five-year average is 82%. 44% of the crop is dented. 39% is the five-year average, and 5% of the crop is now mature. 5% is also the rolling five-year average. It's considered to be in 49% good and 15% excellent condition. That's down from last week's 52% and 17%. 92% of the soybeans are setting pods at this point, and 4% are dropping leaves. 4% also the rolling five-year average. 55% of that crop in good condition. 14% in excellent. The previous week, 56% and 16% respectively. Now, here are updates from the statisticians from across the Corn Belt.
This is Melissa Couch, agricultural statistician for the USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service. Mostly dry weather allowed Iowa farmers 6.6 days suitable for field work during the week ending August 23, 2020. Dry conditions are now a concern for most of the state. The state's top soil moisture condition deteriorated to over 3/4 short to very short. The state's subsoil moisture condition fell to almost 3/4 short to very short. These are the highest levels of short to very short topsoil and subsoil moisture conditions since September 2013. Corn was 91% in the dough stage or beyond, over 2 weeks ahead of the previous year and 6 days ahead of the five-year average. Almost half of the corn crop was in or beyond dent stage, 12 days ahead of the previous year and 5 days ahead of average. Corn condition rated 50% good to excellent, a drop of 9 percentage points from the previous week and the lowest level this crop season. Soybean setting pods were 18 days ahead of last year and over a week ahead of average at 95%. Soybean condition fell again this week with the crop now rated 56% good to excellent, the lowest level so far this season. Some farmers have been cleared to hay or graze CRP acres due to drought conditions. For the USDA NAS Upper Midwest Regional Field Office, this is Melissa Couch.
This is Mark Schleusener, state statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Cooler and drier are the words for last week's weather. Temperatures averaged 2.4 degrees below normal, and rainfall averaged just over 1/10 of an inch for the week, compared to 7/10 normally. Temperatures range from slightly below normal to nearly 4 degrees below normal across the prairie state. There was an average of 6.8 days suitable for field work last week. Topsoil moisture supplies declined to 6% very short, 29 short, 64 adequate, and 1% surplus. The Illinois corn crop has reached the dough stage or beyond on 93% of acres, compared to 69 last year and 88 for the five-year average. 47% of acres have reached the dent stage compared to 51 normally. The condition of the crop was 6% very poor to poor, 22 fair and 72% good to excellent. That is worse than the previous week. Soybeans in Illinois are setting pods on 92% of acres compared to 76 last year and 89 normally. Soybean conditions were reported as 6% very poor to poor, 21 fair and 73% good to excellent. That is also worse than 1 week earlier. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Dan Loftus, state statistician for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office. Statewide, topsoil moisture condition rated 3% very short, 13% short, 74% adequate, and 10% surplus. Subsoil moisture condition rated 3% very short, 10% short, 79% adequate, and 8% surplus. Corn had reached the dough stage or beyond on 91% of acres. That's 17 days ahead of last year and 1 week ahead of the five-year average. Corn acreage was 33% at or beyond the dent stage. That's 13 days ahead of last year and 2 days ahead of average. Harvesting corn silage was reported in some areas. Corn condition dropped slightly to 82%, good to excellent. Soybeans were 7% turning color. That's 9 days ahead of last year, but equal to the average. Soybean condition also rated 82%, good to excellent. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Our thanks go to the state statisticians for their weekly updates of crop progress across the Midwest. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Hey, thanks, Gary, for being with us. For the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu, on a Tuesday, you've written another article, this one about fertilizer cost. What'd you take a look at?
Yeah, we looked at fertilizer cost and in particular lowering rates of fertilizer and what that might do for cost. What motivated that was two things. They've recently updated the removal rates for phosphorus and potassium for both corn and soybeans and lowered them. If you look at the lower rates compared to the old rates, if you put fertilizer on at maintenance levels based on the lower rates, it saves $9 an acre on corn. So that's a savings that's worth pursuing. So if we're still using the older rates to make fertilizer decisions, then let's update to the new rates. The other thing is the MRTN for nitrogen is roughly in the 180 to 190 range per pound per acre. And we see some farmers much higher than that. And if we back off those nitrogen rates, some people can save upwards to $17-$20 per acre. So the combination of the two can be significant, and so we wrote about that today.
Yeah, so what does it do inside the budget then? What does 2021 look like for the total budget?
Yeah, the total budget, we're looking at roughly $130 of cost for fertilizer, roughly $600 to $700 of cost for corn. So if you take that down, you're looking at a lower cost moving forward. So 130 and some fertilizer savings in there, maybe in the $10 to $20 per acre range.
And in this kind of climate, every dollar counts for sure, because the budgets are just so very tight. And in fact, if I remember correctly, you're projecting a loss for 2021?
Yeah, we are projecting losses for 2021. The only way that we will see, or the way we see positive profits, is two things happening simultaneously. One is above average yields again, and we've had those for a number of years. And if we can repeat those good yields in 2021, and also have some continuation of the MFP CFAP program or some other program payments in 2021. So we continue to need those program payments to make our budgets positive.
Gary Schnitke is an agricultural economist at the University of Illinois. You can see his fertilizer cost article on the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Those costs, of course, are based on updated information from the College of ACES, Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences, and the Crop Sciences Department. Emerson Nafziger set about putting those together back in 2017. The numbers have been around for a while. These are updates of both phosphorus and potassium, and as well as the MRTN, which is the driving force behind nitrogen. Can you tell me about the phosphorus and potassium update first? Where did that come from?
It wasn't a conceptual change like we did for nitrogen. It was, you know, nothing really changed very much, but we were aware that the removal numbers, and that's basically when you harvest off a bushel of corn or soybeans, how much P and K come off with it. And that's important, because with P and K, they're immobile in the soil, and we're always looking to say, okay, we took off, you know, 100 pounds, and that means we need to put that back at some point. There's always some looseness in there with regard to timing, because our soils don't run out suddenly one day, and, you know, and we don't see it coming. But over time, we want to calculate as best we can a number that says if we took off in the last 2 years, 220 bushel of corn and 70 bushels of soybeans, we want to know how much P and K we need to put back if we're running the applicator after harvest this fall of soybeans.
So the corn crop has got better, and utilization means that less is being taken off. Do we have a calculator for that, or something that we can use, that producers can use in the field, to make sure that they're putting the right dry fertilizer down?
We're not sure that the amount that the crop takes off really changed. Our problem was that the numbers that we had were very old, That's why we set about taking some 2,000 samples of grain, corn and soybeans each, in Illinois, from all around Illinois, and seeing how much P and K they actually have in them.
And so this is just a calculation that producers and the fertilizer companies will be able to do.
Some people are using this, maybe supplemented with soil testing, but over the years, if you put back what you've taken off, we don't think the soil test levels or the availability is going to change a great deal. So it's one way that people are using to use variable rate application with grid soil sampling, and you can pretty much say, okay, in this acre here, we took this much off, and now we can put that much back because we have yield records for the, to match those up. So that's the impetus for this, is that we can get pretty good at replacing what we took off if we combine yield maps with the P&K removal. We calculate P&K removal off the yield map, and then we can know how much to put back on a grid basis.
And this is at a lower level than previously the calculations would have been.
They are modestly lower. I believe it's less than 10% lower, if I recall correctly, for P&K. And we'll put those numbers out there so that people can look at them. I believe that most of the fertilizer industry has at least seen those. You know, that's not a huge change. And over time, I think what it means in most fields is that the slow rise in soil test levels we see when input or the amount we apply as fertilizer exceeds removal over the long years is likely to slow down and maybe stop. Most soil test levels that are at a good level right now, you know, our thing we're most interested in is just keeping them from falling. And most farmers are doing that pretty well.
And finally, what are your fall recommendations for nitrogen application and anhydrous ammonia?
Well, I guess it's no longer quite as automatic as it might have been at one time that people will go out with anhydrous. It's, or, you know, the alternatives are waiting until next spring to put it on certainly haven't been a big problem for many people. When fall's too wet to put it on, then we're forced to do that. It's still nice to get some on in the fall for some people. Dealers don't all carry anhydrous or emphasize it anymore. But the only thing I'll say at this point is that we really need to wait till the soil temperatures get down. And for most practical purposes, that means waiting till about November the 1st. We'll watch the weather and soil temperatures in October and see how they're coming down. But it's pretty rare that soil temperatures get safely below 50 degrees by the third week in October and then stay there. And all we're trying to do is slow the conversion of that ammonium to nitrate. And it's the nitrate that can move around and move out. And that's what we'd like to have a minimum of as we go into the winter.
Right, so use the MRTN calculator, the N-rate calculator you can find online. Wait till after November 1. Alternative uses, all alternatives are worthwhile in your opinion, and spring's okay.
Well, we don't have any alternatives for fall.
Well, that's what, yeah,
some people,
I know.
Some people do go into with urea in the fall, and we just think that's a bad idea. If we're going to do fall, it has to be anhydrous, and it really needs to be done properly. And that, in most cases, means putting N-serve or Centuro, one of the nitrification inhibitors with it to keep it from help with that, slowing that conversion along with the cool soil temperatures.
Emerson Nafziger is an extension agronomist on the Urbana-Champaign campus at the University of Illinois. Gary Schnitke is an agricultural economist and used the numbers that Emerson produced for both potassium and phosphorus to put together the Farm Doc Daily article you'll find today at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. And one of the ways that next year's crop budgets for corn in the state of Illinois can be produced by lowering the amount of P and K that are applied this fall. On this Tuesday, we're joined by Don Day, a day weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, to discuss the weather forecast. I'd like to start in the Gulf of Mexico. Marco has dissipated. Doesn't seem like that was that big of an event. However, Laura keeps gaining strength. And I'm wondering if we have a track that you think is pretty solid at this point and where that might be for this hurricane to come to shore.
Well, you could never say a solid track with a hurricane ever. However, the computer guidance and the trajectories are all pretty much in agreement that East Texas and right along that Texas-Louisiana border is the area that we need to watch for landfall. It is going to be a pretty strong hurricane. Landfall looks to be imminent in terms of being hurricane strength. Houston is under the gun, and we'll need to keep a very close watch on it as we go into the next 72 hours here. What will happen after Laura is it does appear is that it's going to be drifting almost due northward. So we're going to see some significant rains go into Arkansas, parts of maybe eastern Oklahoma, Missouri. Then some of the southern and eastern areas of the Corn Belt will get what's left of it. And so that could end up bringing some real significant rains to those areas.
No reason to think it'll stall out and backtrack like Harvey did over Houston a few years back.
Doesn't look like that. And the one reason that probably won't happen is as we get into the second half of the weekend and into early next week, there's going to be a pretty significant trough coming out of Western Canada. And what that'll do is that will move it along and push it off to the east. As it goes north, it'll get shunted to the east. And that same trough coming in out of Canada, Todd, is going to end up bringing a significant change in the weather to the western states that has been suffering heat and dryness and wildfires. Well, temperatures will drop significantly across parts of the northern and central Rockies and into the northern plain states for the first couple of days of September.
Any thought that it'll bring rainfall relief to parts of those areas and California too, I suppose?
California is going to struggle to get rain out of it, but the northern Rockies, the fires in Idaho, Oregon, Montana, and even into some of the fire areas of Colorado and Arizona and Utah should get some rains out of this pattern that should help those areas.
What does it mean for the Corn Belt, if anything?
Well, it will mean, especially for Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, eastern areas of Nebraska, there's going to be a pretty good outbreak of shower and thunderstorm activity along that front early next week. So those areas, which are probably too far north and west to feel the impacts of Laura, we'll have a chance of rain with that front.
Anything else before I let you go for the day?
Well, it's going to be a busy week next week with the hurricane, with this cold front coming on in. So we do see things changing heading into September.
Thank you so much, Don.
Thanks, Todd.
Don Day is with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report.